Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on DPLEX. The content featured in this episode on strategic intellectual property management in the medical industry comes from Peter Westness.
So, if you go back to the 1940s, Lærdal was basically this small publishing house in Norway.
Right. They were printing greeting cards and, you know, children's books.
Yeah, exactly. Greeting cards. And today, they are this massive global healthcare titan with a very specific goal. I mean, they are actively trying to help save 1 million more lives every single year by 2030.
Which is just a staggering ambition.
It really is. And the secret engine that, you know, allowed them to make that spectacular leap from paper cards to saving lives, it wasn't just advancements in medical science.
No, not at all.
It was actually this radical, almost ruthless restructuring of their intellectual property.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're looking at today. We are pulling from a really detailed case study by CEEPI. That's the Center for International Intellectual Property Studies.
Right.
They basically put Lærdal under the microscope to see how a company actually navigates this kind of profound structural shift. And what we find is that Lærdal, guided by their head of IP, Petter Westness, they completely redefined what IP even means to a modern business.
And I want to say right up front, for anyone listening who hears the words intellectual property and immediately glazes over.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because, you know, you're thinking of dusty patent filings or like boring trademark lawsuits. This deep dive is going to completely flip that script for you. We are looking at this entire journey through the lens of Westness's own strategy. We're going to see how a legacy manufacturer took what is usually just this dry administrative legal function and turned it into, well, the dynamic control mechanism for a whole global ecosystem.
Yeah. And to really appreciate the scale of that transformation, you have to look at where they actually started.
Right. The greeting cards.
Exactly. After the greeting cards, Lærdal moved into making wooden toys. And then they eventually developed this real expertise in soft plastics.
Oh, yeah.
And it was that specific capability in plastics that allowed the founder, Åsmund Lærdal, to collaborate with doctors back in the late 1950s.
Right.
They ended up creating the very first lifelike training mannequin right at the exact moment when mouth-to-mouth resuscitation was being validated by the medical community.
Oh, wow. So the timing was perfect.
It was. And that mannequin became Resusci-Ann, which is, you know, the CPR doll you have almost certainly seen or practiced on if you've ever taken a first aid class.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, they built a physical product for a physical action, right? You compress the chest, you blow air into the mouth.
Exactly.
And for decades, their whole business model and their IP strategy really was entirely built around that physical reality. You make a plastic mannequin, you patent the unique physical design of those plastic components, and then you sell it.
Right. The entire focus was on manufacturing superiority, just protecting the physical molds. But then, of course, the modern technological wave hit.
As it always does.
Right. And suddenly, the healthcare training market didn't just want a plastic doll anymore. They demanded sensorized devices. They wanted the Internet of Things.
Yeah. I mean, we are talking about mannequins today that measure the exact depth and frequency of a chest compression. And then they send that data via Bluetooth to a tablet.
Exactly, and run it through a software algorithm.
Yeah, to tell a medical student if they're actually saving a life or, you know, just breaking ribs.
Which is a seismic shift for any company. But it is an absolute earthquake for one that is so steeped in traditional self-contained manufacturing.
Right.
You are suddenly forced to move from molding polymers to integrating open source software, building data analytics platforms, and designing digital user interfaces.
Well, and Petter Westness has this fascinating reflection in this CIPI case study on just how fundamentally Lærdal had to change internally just to keep up.
Yeah, he really lays it out.
He points out that historically, Lærdal basically did everything themselves. He notes, and I'm quoting here, "We had our own printing department where we printed all physical material and directions for use and instruction manuals."
Right. They were an entirely closed loop.
Exactly. But today, they have to navigate these collaborative digital partnerships and like open source code libraries.
And that changes everything. Because when you do everything in-house, you mix the plastic, you mold the doll, you print the manuals, your IP strategy is brilliantly simple.
You just lock the factory door.
Exactly. You lock the doors and you file patents on the finished physical goods. Mm-hmm. But when you transition to this collaborative digital model, engaging external software developers and figuring out how to beam data into a hospital server, your risk landscape just explodes in 1,000 different directions.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second because I have to push back on that premise.
Sure.
If you are a company that has spent 50 years perfecting physical plastics and suddenly your entire industry pivots to cloud software and data analytics, mm-hmm. doesn't your legacy patent portfolio become basically useless overnight?
That's a great question.
I mean, it feels like a local hardware store suddenly realizing it has to compete as a Silicon Valley software developer. How do you even begin to protect that? You can't just slap a traditional patent on a stream of Bluetooth data.
Well, and that is exactly the existential crisis that crushes most legacy companies. Because yes, your old patents do become significantly less valuable.
Right.
That internal reorganization from a closed hardware-centric model to an open collaborative digital model, it requires an absolute overhaul of what you are actually trying to protect.
So what did they do?
Well, Wessis realized they had to completely shift their anxiety. Instead of worrying about a competitor stealing a plastic mold, they suddenly had to worry about trade secret leakage in joint software vendors.
Oh, wow.
Or the incredibly murky rules around patenting software algorithms and the vulnerabilities of using open source code.
Because, I mean, if you partner with an external tech firm to help build the software that evaluates a nurse's CPR performance, the immediate legal nightmare is, who owns that data?
Exactly. Who owns the algorithm interpreting the compressions?
Right.
The convergence of hardware and software blurs the lines of every traditional IP category. You can no longer just hand a physical prototype to a patent attorney and say, hey, protect this thing.
Yeah, it's not a wooden toy anymore.
No. It requires the company to step back and conduct this holistic reorganization of where they actually generate their value.
And that is where Wessis and his team introduced a concept that honestly completely changed how Laerdal organizes its efforts. They call it the value generation web.
The value generation web, yeah.
Because the underlying technology has shifted from a piece of plastic to a digital ecosystem, they basically had to map out exactly where the real value is being created for the end user.
Right, and it's a brilliant framework because it forces the company to trace the creation of value sequentially. It starts from the absolute raw materials and moves all the way through to the final integration of the solution into the customer's daily life.
Wessis explains this web perfectly in this study. Let me actually just read his exact breakdown because the progression is really the key to their whole change management strategy here. He says, for us, it starts in the bottom there with raw materials entering into our factory. That's the physical product. And then we add a layer of software for control. All of these needs to be then integrated into the customer's learning management system. Our traditional IP portfolio has typically been on the physical product side.
What's fascinating here is if you look at the four distinct layers here.
Yeah, let's break this down.
Layer one is the raw material. Layer two is the physical product. Layer three is the software layer for control. And layer four is the integration into the customer's learning management system, or LMS.
Right.
For decades, Laerdal's entire legal and strategic focus was completely stuck on layer two.
Just the physical product. He even mentions in the case study that historically they would spend time and money patenting something as mundane as, like, the fastening bolt of a mannequin's arm.
Right.
Or the specific speaker system hidden inside the chest cavity.
But the strategic shift here is realizing that in a digital age, a monopoly on an internal fastening bolt is practically worthless.
Right. Nobody cares.
Exactly. Wessis recognized that maybe owning the exclusive rights to a speaker system doesn't matter at all if a competitor controls the digital dashboard that the hospital administrator is actually looking at every single day.
And this is where he makes the major pivot. He states, and again I'm quoting, maybe it's not that important for us to own the exclusivity or that we have the monopoly in a unique speaker system within the product we have developed. Maybe how this is delivered out to this customer is more important. So we have spent time on trying to understand this and where it is important for us to have control.
And that is a profound organizational shift. I mean, telling your engineers and your legal team to stop obsessing over the internal components, that requires a massive cultural change. They basically moved their IP focus out of the factory and pushed it as close to the customer as humanly possible.
They just stopped patenting the individual physical parts and started fiercely protecting the integration into the customer's actual workflow.
Exactly. It's a masterclass in change management. I mean, think about the hospital's perspective for a second. The real value to a hospital administrator isn't just the physical mannequin.
Right.
It's the seamless ecosystem of training. It's the software that automatically analyzes the CPR performance, grades it, and then feeds that compliance data directly into the hospital's internal HR system so their nurses stay certified.
Right. The data flow is the product.
Yes. So if Laerdal uses IP to control how that ecosystem integrates with the hospital's infrastructure, they control the market. Even if a competitor figures out how to mold a cheaper plastic arm, it doesn't matter.
Because the cheap arm doesn't talk to the hospital's database.
Exactly.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. It's kind of like an Apple ecosystem, right?
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Like, a copycat manufacturer can easily build a smartphone out of the exact same glass and aluminum. But if they can't get iOS, the App Store, and iCloud to sync with it natively, you know, the customer just isn't going to buy it.
Yeah.
Laerdal essentially realized they couldn't stop someone from copying the ingredients of their recipe. So instead, they lock down the entire experience in the delivery system.
Yeah.
The copycats have the product, but they can't access the customer.
Precisely. The physical hardware becomes secondary to the digital relationship. But, and this is a big but, executing that strategy globally introduces a massive layer of complexity.
Oh, for sure.
Because moving your IP focus to the customer integration layer sounds incredibly smart in a boardroom, right?
Yeah.
But Laerdal operates across wildly different global markets.
Yeah.
They face entirely different competitive threats depending on which sector they're actually looking at.
Yeah. And the CEPI study breaks down how Westness avoids like a one-size-fits-all approach.
Right.
He adapts this value generation web framework based on the specific business area.
Right.
So let's look at the resuscitation area first. In this space, Laerdal is facing off against massive, highly IP-intensive medical device giants like Philips and Medtronic.
Right. And when you are operating in the same arena as a Philips or a Medtronic, your objective is not to crush them or block them out of the market entirely.
I mean, good luck trying.
Exactly. It's impossible. They have too much capital and mountains of foundational patents.
Hey, are you an IP expert with a focus topic you want to share? Then you might be just the right fit to become an IP subject matter expert at the IP Business Academy. It's a great opportunity to build visibility for your expertise and reach new clients through a trusted academic platform. You'll be supported in creating digital content, LinkedIn strategies, and outreach to your target group. If you're ready to raise your profile and position yourself as a thought leader, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. End of advertisement.
So, Laerdal's IP strategy has to shift. The goal becomes securing what is known in the industry as freedom to operate.
Okay, and just to clarify for everyone, freedom to operate essentially means making sure you have the legal clearance to build and sell your product without getting sued into oblivion by a competitor who owns like a slightly similar patent, right?
Exactly that. Against the giants, Laerdal uses its IP portfolio defensively and collaboratively.
Okay.
So they engage in inbound licensing, which means paying for the right to use someone else's patented technology, or they set up shared ownership arrangements.
So the IP isn't a weapon to destroy the competition?
No, not at all. No. It's the currency they use to ensure they have a seat at the table and, you know, the legal right to just keep playing the game.
But then that collaborative approach completely vanishes when you look at their patient care business area.
Right.
Because the market dynamics there were totally different. There are fewer massive corporate behemoths in that specific niche, so Laerdal's objective flips.
Yeah, the strategy changes completely.
Instead of shared ownership, they lean heavily into brand protection and creating steep entry barriers. They want to control the complete value chain.
And then you have their global health sector, which operates on an entirely different philosophical logic.
Yeah, this part blew my mind.
Right. This is a not-for-profit sector for Laerdal. It's primarily aimed at saving the lives of mothers and newborns during childbirth in low-resource settings around the world.
Which instinctively, you know, makes you think,
yeah,
just give it all away.
Exactly.
If the goal is strictly humanitarian, why bother with intellectual property at all? Just open source everything so as many rural clinics as possible can get the equipment right.
And that is the very common assumption.
Hmm.
The IP goal in their global health sector isn't to create a lucrative monopoly. It is strictly to ensure product quality and safety.
But wait. How does a patent or a trademark physically ensure safety in a rural clinic, though?
It acts as a rigor certification mechanism.
Okay.
So let's say Laerdal develops a low-cost, highly accurate newborn heart rate monitor for use in these low-resource settings.
Right.
If they completely open source it with zero IP protection, any third-party manufacturer anywhere can start building copies.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Right. And if an under-regulated manufacturer uses cheaper, failing sensors just to save money, that heart rate monitor might give a false reading. In a critical childbirth scenario, an inferior copy doesn't just mean lost revenue.
It means a newborn dies.
Exactly.
So an IP acts as a shield against deadly knockoffs.
Yes. They use their trademarks and design rights to maintain strict quality audits. A partner manufacturer can only put the Laerdal name on a device or use the protected design if they prove they are meeting the exact clinical specifications. The IP is deployed as a quality control mechanism to guarantee that the life-saving tool actually works when the doctor reaches for it.
That honestly reframes the entire concept of what a trademark even is.
It really does.
But bringing it back to the commercial side, Wessenis talks specifically about how this strategic placement of IP protects them from one of the most aggressive modern commercial threats. Low-cost B2B copycats.
Right.
Particularly manufacturers operating out of regions like China. He explains this dynamic perfectly in the study. He says they can develop similar products, but they have problems entering into the customer relationship. So that's really where we need to control and have the critical IP.
And this brings us full circle to the value generation web and that Apple ecosystem analogy you brought up earlier.
Yeah.
The copycat manufacturer is incredibly skilled at reverse engineering the physical mannequin. They can scan the plastic, duplicate the molds, and build a hardware clone for a fraction of the cost.
But because Laerdal shifted their IP strategy away from those plastic molds and heavily guarded the digital integration, you know, the software layer and the LMS connection, the copycat just hits a brick wall.
Exactly. The copycat has the physical product, but they are entirely locked out of the hospital's digital ecosystem.
Yeah.
And Wessenis is very blunt about adopting this aggressive posture when it is commercially necessary. He says, with IP, we want to create barriers and increase risk for our competitors. We want to make it more difficult for them to enter into our field with similar products.
It's a highly adaptable strategy.
I mean,
they use IP as a collaborative handshake when dealing with Philips.
Right.
They use it as a strict quality assurance badge in global health.
Yep.
And then they use it as this impenetrable fortress wall when fighting off low-cost copycats.
Which naturally leads to the most complex challenge for any executive listening to this. Measurement.
Oh, sure. The metrics.
Right. With a multi-tiered organizational strategy that is constantly shifting between physical patents, digital trade secrets, and varying market fronts, how does Laerdal actually prove to its board that this massive change management effort is working?
Yeah, because measuring the value of IP is notoriously tricky. The CIPI case study highlights that Laerdal relies heavily on strict international standards to keep this complex system organized.
They do.
Specifically, they align with ISO 56005 and DIN N77006.
Right, and those standards are essentially the global gold standards for innovation management.
Okay.
They ensure that Laerdal's IP strategy isn't just this chaotic, reactive process driven by lawyers filing paperwork at random. Instead, these ISO frameworks force the entire company to utilize a strict Plan-Do-Check-Act cycle.
Walk us through what that cycle actually looks like in practice for their team.
Sure. So it means IP is integrated into the product lifecycle from day one.
Okay.
The engineers and the IP team sit down early in the development of a new digital platform to identify exactly where the ecosystem moat needs to be built.
Got it.
They execute the strategy. Whether that's filing specific software patents or locking down trade secrets with external developers.
Right.
Check. They conduct rigorous audits to see if those protections are actually stopping the copycats or genuinely securing the hospital LMS integration.
And then act.
Exactly. Act. Then they adjust the strategy based on real-world competitive feedback.
It sounds incredibly rigorous, but here is the detail from the case study that absolutely fascinates me.
What's that?
Despite adhering to all these strict international standards and utilizing the Plan-Do-Check-Act cycle, Laerdal, remarkably, does not explicitly track the financial return on investment of specific IP assets.
No, they don't.
They don't maintain a spreadsheet that says, hey, patent A cost us this much to file, and it generated Y millions of dollars in exclusive revenue.
And that approach drives traditional corporate accountants absolutely crazy.
I bet.
Most boards want to see a direct, measurable financial return for every single dollar spent on legal fees and patent maintenance. But Petter Wessenis has cultivated a deeply pragmatic, almost philosophical view on the value of their IP that completely bypasses that kind of bean counting.
And his quote on this is arguably the most insightful part of the entire case study.
Yeah, it's really good.
He asks, "So how much is this worth? When people ask me, is it worth it? Should we spend less?" I find it's extremely difficult to answer because we can measure the numerical size of our portfolio. But that doesn't really matter at all. However, every time we're in a situation which prompts us to think that there must be some IP here, or I'm glad I have IP because that gives me the necessary tools in my toolbox to take action, that's when you see the real value.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, by redefining IP as a toolbox, Westness achieves the ultimate goal of corporate change management.
Yeah.
He has taken a siloed legal function and ingrained it into the daily mindset of the entire business. It is no longer just an apartment calculating the sunk costs of patent renewal fees.
He strips away all the corporate speak and summarizes it perfectly. He says, "We use IP actively to either reduce risks for us as an organization or to gain benefits." It is genuinely that simple for them.
And because that mindset is integrated into every level of their operations, from the engineers designing the software to the sales team pitching the hospitals, the success of the IP strategy doesn't need its own separate financial dashboard.
Right.
The proof is simply reflected in the overall success of the business. If Laerdal is maintaining its market leadership, fending off the copycats, and actively achieving its mission of saving 1 million lives, then the IP strategy is working.
So what does this all mean? Think about it like buying a fire extinguisher for your office building. You don't sit at your desk calculating the daily financial ROI of that red cylinder hanging on the wall. Mm-hmm. You don't ask, you know, how much revenue it generated for you on a Tuesday.
Right, because that's not its purpose.
Exactly. You judge its immense value by the simple fact that it is exactly what you need right when you need it.
I love that.
When a competitor tries to encroach on their digital ecosystem, or a manufacturer tries to push a dangerous, failing knockoff into a rural clinic, Laerdal reaches into their toolbox. The fire extinguisher is right there, fully charged and ready to deploy.
And that seamless integration is really the true hallmark of their evolution. They evolved from a company that protected physical objects to a company that protects an entire life-saving ecosystem.
Yeah.
And they achieved that by making intellectual property everybody's business, not just the legal departments.
It is an incredible journey. I mean, we've seen how Laerdal, guided by Petter Westness, navigated massive technological disruption. They survived the leap from printing their own paper manuals to managing the Internet of Things.
They really did.
They completely reorganized their IP strategy, moving away from patenting internal physical parts like a speaker system, and instead focused entirely on the value generation web.
They placed their most aggressive control mechanisms as close to the customer relationship as possible, locking out copycats by dominating the digital integration layer.
Right. And through it all, they transformed IP from a dusty legal obligation into a vital, flexible toolbox dedicated entirely to their core mission of saving lives.
Which leaves us with a rather profound dynamic to consider, especially when we reflect on their global health initiatives.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
In the modern tech world, we frequently romanticize the idea of open source innovation.
Oh, absolutely.
We tend to assume that freely sharing all data and designs is inherently the best and fastest way to help humanity.
Yeah, the narrative is often that patents only exist to serve corporate greed and, like, stifle progress.
But if a company like Laerdal, one that is strictly dedicated to saving lives globally, including in the lowest resource settings on Earth, uses intellectual property not to selfishly hoard knowledge, but as a necessary control mechanism to guarantee product quality and protect the end user from dangerous variations.
It changes everything.
It really does. How might that change how we view controlled innovation in healthcare? Could tight corporate control, when aligned with a moral mission, actually be the safest way to ensure that a life-saving technology actually does what it's supposed to do?
I mean, if control is what guarantees quality, and quality is what ultimately saves lives, then that dusty legal filing cabinet isn't just a defensive wall. It is the heartbeat of the whole operation.
It really is.
Something to definitely ponder as you go about your day. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.